Chapter 77. Lady Masham, get some help, apostrophe, and I ran towards the doctor, who, with the Bishop of Rochester, came up instantly. Lady Masham whispered the prince he might hope for the very best, and to be ready tomorrow, and he hath gone away to the Bishop of Rochester's house, to meet several of his friends there. And so the great stroke is struck, says Beatrix, going down on her knees, and clasping her hands. God save the king! God save the king! Beatrix's tale told, and the young lady herself calmed somewhat of her agitation. We asked with regard to the prince, who was absent with Bishop Atterbury, and were informed that 'twas likely he might remain abroad the whole day. Beatrix's three kinsfolk looked at one another at this intelligence. 'Twas clear the same thought was passing through the minds of all. But who should begin to break the news? Monsieur Baptist, that is Frank Castlewood, turned very red, and looked towards Esmond. The colonel bit his lips, and fairly beat a retreat into the window. It was Lady Castlewood that opened upon Beatrix with the news which we knew would do anything but please her. We are glad, says she, taking her daughter's hand, and speaking in a gentle voice, that the guest is away. Beatrix drew back in an instant, looking round her at us three, and as if divining a danger. I glad? Says she, her breast beginning to heave. Are you so soon tired of him? We think one of us is devilishly too fond of him, cries out Frank Castlewood. And which is it, you, my lord, or is it mamma, who is jealous, because he drinks my health, or is it the head of the family? Here she turned with an imperious look towards Colonel Esmond, who has taken of late to preach the king's sermons. We do not say you are too free with his majesty. I thank you, madam, says Beatrix, with a toss of the head and a curtsy. But her mother continued, with very great calmness and dignity, T least we have not said so, though we might, were it possible for a mother, to say such words to her own daughter, your father's daughter. Eh, mon pere, breaks out Beatrix, was no better than other persons' fathers. And again she looked towards the colonel. We all felt a shock as she uttered those two or three French words. Her manner was exactly imitated from that of our foreign guest. You had not learned to speak French a month ago, Beatrix, says her mother, sadly, nor to speak ill of your father. Beatrix, no doubt, saw that slip as he had made in her flurry, for she blushed crimson. Colon, I have learned to honor the king, says she, drawing up, and twere as well that others suspected neither his majesty nor me. If you respected your mother a little more, Frank said, Trix, you would do yourself no hurt. I am no child, says she, turning round on him. We have lived very well these 5 years without the benefit of your advice or example, and I intend to take neither now. Why does not the head of the house speak? She went on. He rules everything here. When his chaplain has done singing the psalms, will his lordship deliver the sermon? I am tired of the psalms. The prince had used almost the very same words in regard to Colonel Esmond that the imprudent girl repeated in her wrath. You show yourself a very apt scholar, madam, says the colonel, and, turning to his mistress, did your guest use these words in your ladyship's hearing, or was it to Beatrix in private that he was pleased to impart his opinion regarding my tiresome sermon? Have you seen him alone? Cries my lord, starting up with an oath. By God, have you seen him alone? Were he here, you wouldn't dare so to insult me. No, you would not dare, cries Frank's sister. Keep your oaths, my lord, for your wife. We are not used here to such language. Till you came, there used to be kindness between me and mamma, and I cared for her when you never did, when you were away 4 years with your horses and your mistress, and your popish wife. By, says my lord, rapping out another oath, Clotilda is an angel. How dare you say a word against Clotilda? Colonel Esmond could not refrain from a smile, to see how easy Frank's attack was drawn off by that feint. Fancy Clotilda is not the subject in hand, says Mr. Esmond, rather scornfully. Her ladyship is at Paris, 100 leagues off, preparing baby linen. It is about my Lord Castlewood's sister, and not his wife. The question is, he is not my Lord Castlewood, says Beatrix, and he knows he is not. He is Colonel Francis Esmond's son, and no more, and he wears a false title, and he lives on another man's land, and he knows it. Here was another desperate sally of the poor beleaguered garrison, and an alert in another quarter. Gain, I beg your pardon, says Esmond. If there are no proofs of my claim, I have no claim. If my father acknowledged no heir, yours was his lawful successor, and my Lord Castlewood hath as good a right to his rank and small estate as any man in England. But that again is not the question, as you know very well. Let us bring our talk back to it, as you will have me meddle in it. And I will give you frankly my opinion, that a house where a prince lies all day, who respects no woman, is no house for a young unmarried lady, that you were better in the country than here, that he is here on a great end, from which no folly should divert him, and that having nobly done your part of this morning, Beatrix, you should retire off the scene a while, and leave it to the other actors of the play. As the colonel spoke with a perfect calmness and politeness, such as 'tis to be hoped he hath always shown to women, asterisk his mistress stood by him on one side of the table, and Frank Castlewood on the other, hemming in poor Beatrix, that was behind it, and, as it were, surrounding her with our approaches. Asterisk my dear father saith quite truly, that his manner towards our sex was uniformly courteous. From my infancy upwards, he treated me with an extreme gentleness, as though I was a little lady. I can scarce remember, though I tried him often, ever hearing a rough word from him, nor was he less grave and kind in his manner to the humblest negresses on his estate. He was familiar with no one except my mother, and it was delightful to witness up to the very last days the confidence between them. He was obeyed eagerly by all under him, and my mother and all her household lived in a constant emulation to please him, and quite a terror lest in any way they should offend him. He was the humblest man with all this, the least exacting, the more easily contented. And Mr. Benson, our minister at Castlewood, who attended him at the last, ever said, know not what Colonel Esmond's doctrine was, but his life and death were those of a devout Christian. R. E. W. Having twice sallied out, and been beaten back, she now, as I expected, tried the ultima ratio of women, and had recourse to tears. Her beautiful eyes filled with them. I never could bear in her, nor in any woman, that expression of pain. I'm alone, sobbed she. You are three against me, my brother, my mother, and you. What have I done, that you should speak, and look so unkindly at me? Is it my fault that the prince should, as you say, admire me? Did I bring him here? Did I do aught but what you bade me in making him welcome? Did you not tell me that our duty was to die for him? Did you not teach me, mother, night and morning to pray for the king before even ourselves? What would you have of me, cousin, for you are the chief of the conspiracy against me? I know you are, sir, and that my mother and brother are acting, but as you bid them, whither would you have me go? I would but remove from the prince, says Esmond, gravely, a dangerous temptation. Heaven forbid I should say you would yield, I would only have him free of it. Your honor needs no guardian, please God, but is imprudent stuff. He is so far removed from all women by his rank, that his pursuit of them cannot but be unlawful. We would remove the dearest and fairest of our family from the chance of that insult, and that is why we would have you go, dear Beatrix. Harry speaks like a book, says Frank, with one of his oaths, and, by every word he saith is true. You can't help being handsome, Trix. No more can the prince help following you. My counsel is that you go out of harm's way, for, by the Lord, were the prince to play any tricks with you, king as he is, or is to be, Harry Esmond and I would have justice of him. Are not two such champions enough to guard me? Says Beatrix, something sorrowfully. Sure, with you two watching, no evil could happen to me. In faith, I think not, Beatrix, says Colonel Esmond, nor if the prince knew us would he try. But does he know you? Interposed Lady Castlewood. Very quiet colon he comes of a country where the pursuit of kings is thought no dishonor to a woman. Let us go, dearest Beatrix. Shall we go to Walcott or to Castlewood? We are best away from the city, and when the prince is acknowledged, and our champions have restored him, and he hath his own house at St. James or Windsor, we can come back to ours here. Do you not think so, Harry and Frank? Frank and Harry thought with her, you may be sure. We will go then, says Beatrix, turning a little pale. Lady Masham is to give me warning tonight how her majesty is, and tomorrow I think we had best go today, my dear, says my Lady Castlewood. We might have the coach and sleep at Hounslow, and reach home tomorrow. 'Tis 12 o'clock. Bid the coach, cousin, be ready at 1. For shame, burst out Beatrix, in a passion of tears and mortification. Who disgrace me by your cruel precautions? My own mother is the first to suspect me, and would take me away as my galler. I will not go with you, mother, I will go as no one's prisoner. If I wanted to deceive, do you think I could find no means of evading you? My family suspects me. As those mistrust me that ought to love me most, let me leave them. I will go, but I will go alone. To Castlewood, be it. I have been unhappy there and lonely enough. Let me go back, but spare me at least the humiliation of setting a watch over my misery, which is a trial I can't bear. Let me go when you will, but alone, or not at all. You three can stay, and triumph over my unhappiness, and I will bear it as I have borne it before. Let my galler-in-chief go order the coach, that is to take me away. I thank you, Henry Esmond, for your share in the conspiracy. All my life long I'll thank you, and remember you, and you, brother, and you, mother, how shall I show my gratitude to you for your careful defense of my honor? She swept out of the room with the air of an empress, flinging glances of defiance at us all, and leaving us conquerors of the field, but scared, and almost ashamed of our victory. It did indeed seem hard, and cruel that we three should have conspired the banishment and humiliation of that fair creature. We looked at each other in silence. 'Twas not the first stroke by many of our actions in that unlucky time, which, being done, we wished undone. We agreed it was best she should go alone, speaking stealthily to one another, and under our breaths, like persons engaged in an act they felt ashamed in doing. In a half hour, it might be, after our talk she came back, her countenance wearing the same defiant air which it had borne when she left us. She held a shagreen case in her hand. Esmond knew it as containing his diamonds which he had given to her for her marriage with Duke Hamilton, and which as he had worn so splendidly on the inauspicious night of the prince's arrival. Have brought back, says she, to the Marquis of Esmond the present he deigned to make me in days when he trusted me better than now. I will never accept a benefit or a kindness from Henry Esmond more, and I give back these family diamonds, which belong to one king's mistress, to the gentleman that suspected I would be another. Have you been upon your message of coach caller, my lord Marquis? Will you send your valet to see that I do not run away? We were right, yet, by her manner, as he had put us all in the wrong, we were conquerors, yet the honors of the day seemed to be with the poor oppressed girl. That luckless box containing the stones had first been ornamented with a baron's coronet, when Beatrix was engaged to the young gentleman from whom she parted, and afterwards the gilt crown of a duchess figured on the cover, which also poor Beatrix was destined never to wear. Lady Castlewood opened the case mechanically, and scarce thinking what she did. And behold, besides the diamonds, Esmond's present, there lay in the box the enameled miniature of the late Duke, which Beatrix had laid aside with her mourning when the king came into the house, and which the poor heedless thing very likely had forgotten. Do you leave this to Beatrix? Says her mother, taking the miniature out, and with a cruelty she did not very often show. But there are some moments when the tenderest women are cruel, and some triumphs which angels can't forego. *** This remark shows how unjustly and contemptuously even the best of men will sometimes judge of our sex. Lady Castlewood had no intention of triumphing over her daughter, but from a sense of duty alone pointed out her deplorable wrong. H. E. Having delivered this stab, Lady Castlewood was frightened at the effect of her blow. It went to poor Beatrix's heart. She flushed up, and passed a handkerchief across her eyes, and kissed the miniature, and put it into her bosom. "Had forgot it," says she. "My injury made me forget my grief. My mother has recalled both to me. Farewell, mother. I think I never can forgive you. Something hath broke between us that no tears nor years can repair. I always said I was alone. You never loved me, never, and were jealous of me from the time I sat on my father's knee. Let me go away, the sooner the better. I can bear to be with you no more." "Go, child," says her mother, still very stern. "Go and bend your proud knees and ask forgiveness. Go, pray in solitude for humility and repentance. 'Tis not your reproaches that make me unhappy, 'tis your hard heart, my poor Beatrix. May God soften it, and teach you one day to feel for your mother. If my mistress was cruel, at least she never could be got to own as much. Her haughtiness quite overtopped Beatrix's. And, if the girl had a proud spirit, I very much fear it came to her by inheritance." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.